So if you're a furry, you should be organizing, because I know of Nazi furries. So
what? Nazi furries?
Wait, proud.
Nazi furries, like people who dress up as furries that are Nazis?
Furries in Third Reich outfits, yep.
Ooh, furries in Third Reich outfits. My name called it.
This is Hunter Haas, host of a progressive talk radio show on AM 950 KTNF in Minneapolis, Minnesota, appearing on the very first podcast. So radio meets podcast. I'm joined with the boys. Boys, introduce yourselves.
Hi, it's Lars. Me, Joe. Well, that didn't go too well.
Lars, why don't you go ahead?
Okay. My name is Lars. I'm the first host, main host and editor of the first podcast, and I'm joined here with special guest host Hunter Haas. You've heard him before on a previous episode, and if you haven't, you should probably go back and listen to that one, because this is going to be a bit of a sequel. Joe, I'm also joined by you.
Yes, I'm here. I'm Joe. I'm the co-host of the podcast.
Joe is the person who wanted to be on the last episode the most, but he couldn't, and he's joining us here today to talk stuff, politics, and everything in between. So go ahead and take it away, Joe.
Well, if you listen to the original episode, episode 25, Make Progressives Great Again with AM 950 host Hunter Haas, then you would know that we talked about various things, such as who's running for president. Obviously we talked about what's going on with Trump. And a bunch of things, like young people getting involved in politics. I think those are various jumping off points that will probably continue this time. So you could kind of consider this a part two.
When you say we, by the way, you mean me and Hunter, not you at all. You had no contributions to that whatsoever.
No, that was one of the only episodes that I missed, aside from the Alexis episodes back in the beginning.
Well, it's great to have you, Jill. I'm excited to speak with you. It was very
Thank
fun,
you.
My appearance last time.
We'll see if I can ruin it for you. We'll see if I can take that and make it not fun.
Joe.
Lars, I felt, had a great name for the episode, Make Progressives Great Again, because in general, I like talking about the left more than the right, because I feel that we should keep ourselves to a higher standard, be principled progressives, and that too often all the media focuses all their attention on Trump, and we don't talk enough about our vision. So that's often what I like to speak about. But of course, we can't ignore Trump and the Republicans and a conservative agenda that's very dangerous, in my opinion, to the country. So it's an inevitability. But in general, I like speaking about the left more.
Sure. I mean, those are kind of things that we could talk about in no particular order. Hunter, why don't you start us off? Is there anything on your mind that you wanted to talk about first?
It's kind of vague, Joe.
Well, we just got through a midterm, and the Democrats did well.
Yes, very well.
They did. However, there's still a lot of room for improvement, and what worries me is how poorly Democrats are doing in rural areas, because really it's become a party of the suburbs and urban areas. And at some point, we're going to have to focus on what are we going to do for rural areas, because we're losing big in that part of the country. So that's one take I had. But there is a lot of good that also happened in the midterms. I'll get into other things. So feel free to ask. Let's start with the midterms. We can talk about anything.
Yeah, I was actually quite pleased with how the midterms happened, at least in California. We did really well, I think, in terms of our budgeting allocations. I think that infrastructure was poised to take a huge hit with the repeal of the gas tax, and that didn't actually go through, which I'm thankful for, because our infrastructure is badly, badly overdue for improvements.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we didn't get to see Beto O'Rourke win, but it seems like he's not out for good. It seems like he's going to continue to fight the good fight. And I'm actually excited to see where he goes from here.
Beto O'Rourke was very, very close.
This is a good topic, actually. So Beto O'Rourke, there's kind of a conundrum of what to do with him. But first, what happened this year was he and the Democrats in Texas outperformed anything that was ever predicted as possible at like this present time. So though he didn't win, Democrats fared amazing down ticket just because of how many people showed up to vote that don't typically in Texas. And he's kind of changed the conversation of, is Texas in play? However, now
a blue state.
Yeah. At least purple right now.
That's a weird
thought. Cause Texas was the real red state. And I consider Minnesota to be the true blue state. Texas would be our little,
what about like Alabama? Yeah. I consider Alabama more blue than Texas.
Alabama has a Democratic senator
right
now.
That's the thing. Yeah, even Alabama's got it.
Yeah, that's it's been a weird few years with that. Some ways very bad. Some ways.
That's how you know that it's really a blue tsunami, not a blue wave, because Alabama got a Democratic senator, and Texas is now like a purple state.
Well, Alabama. The reason why they did was partially probably because of the character of the person who was running against him.
Yeah, and I want to stick to Beto for a second because
Definitely.
His name is now all over the place for 2020 consideration. However, you have to keep this in mind that he lost to the guy who lost to the current president. And my personal opinion is Beto is much more powerful and useful in Texas rather than as president at this time because of what happened this year and that there's another Senate seat up in 2020. So I would prefer to see him run for that than president.
You know what else they're saying about Beto? The man has support from corporations in much the same way as, let's say, Hillary Clinton. And I didn't fact check that, so I could. But that's the talk. That's what I hear, as well as some other things that make him more of a centrist. He says
Absolutely.
About himself, he doesn't consider himself a progressive, or he doesn't know if he does. I don't know if that was like an outdated quote. I don't know. Do you have more insight on that? If he's too much of a centrist?
Yeah, no, that is a brand new quote. Beto's voting record in Congress is very centrist, very Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden-esque, and definitely, to me, a concern for a possible presidential run because true progressives have become a little infatuated with his charisma and personality and how he fared like up against Ted Cruz. He did look very left wing and in Texas, all things considered.
So are you guys saying that you consider a somewhat center left wing politician to be a bad choice for president? Because I feel like that's a bit different than
absolutely.
Wow. Okay. So that's not very practical at all. I tend to see the presidential race as, you know, something of a, unfortunately, as Hunter's described it in the past, as something of a sport, a competition. And in terms of actually winning it, someone being a little bit more centrist at the actual helm is a much more realistic.
Yeah, let me clarify. Here's how I see it. Mm-hmm. Would I like to see somebody who's more progressive than not? Yes. Would I like to see somebody who's going to be like radically different, like, an FDR, make a new deal and not somebody who's just going to get along, you know, and not disrupt things? Yes. So is that what I want to see? Absolutely. Would it be a shame to not get that? Certainly, you know, but it's better than the alternative.
Well, you have to be careful here because there's a problem when you get someone who's a bit too alienating to the other side.
But
which
I'm assuming
is
somebody who can win. I'm not saying running somebody who couldn't win. I'm saying you have two people who both could win and, you know.
By the way, having corporations in your favor as a Democratic candidate is not necessarily, you know, inherently a bad thing.
Okay.
It depends on what you do with that support. You could be a progressive candidate who has the support of corporations and tries to get them to favor socially responsible practices, which is in vogue at the moment in the economy, and it's a win-win for everyone. So, I mean, it kind of depends on what that actually looks like in terms of execution, I think.
Yeah, okay, I have strong feelings on this, and by all means, you guys can push back and disagree with any part of what I'm going to say. But we are at an interesting point right now. There, in my opinion, since I've gotten politically active or gained a political consciousness, I grew up during the George W. Bush eras, and the Iraq War was really the biggest thing for me. And at that time, it looked like gay marriage would be the best thing I could hope for in my lifetime. Mm. So things have changed. But with Hillary Clinton losing in 2016 and us getting Donald Trump and what he represents and how he is going to be remembered by young people and what the Republican Party represents to so many Americans, that this is the time that we have to put forward someone who has a platform for the people, and to not try and appeal to the Republicans to vote for a Democrat, because Donald Trump is the most popular Republican president ever. He is more popular than Ronald Reagan, according to polling registered Republicans. Donald Trump has the highest approval rating of any president.
I don't know about that.
You mean on the Republican side?
George Bush, after 9/11, had a 90% approval rating.
I think he's talking about on the side of the Republicans.
It's registered, and this is one poll, so take it what it is, but that stood out to me, is that he's their guy. This is who...
Right.
He embodies the Republicans right now.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that a candidate like Bernie Sanders or a true progressive like that is absolutely necessary right now. And we have to be appealing to already the Democrats and those people who don't vote if we're going to survive as a party. We can't continue to do the Clinton, John Kerry move to try and get.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Why Clinton was a really effective president in that matter.
And Bill Clinton.
Do we have the numbers for that?
Not Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Well, yeah, she wasn't elected.
I think that's what Hunter's talking about.
I was talking about Bill Clinton and just that new Democrat in the UK. They had the new Labour movement with Tony Blair. And we see that changing with Jeremy Corbyn, who's basically the Bernie Sanders of the UK. And so this is a global movement. And sorry, I'm kind of going in a lot of places, but I feel the liberal conservative divide is in the past. And Tucker Carlson would agree with me. It's now becoming a nationalist globalist movement.
Hmm.
And in America, what we need to do is have a progressive, you mentioned FDR. That's exactly who we need to model right now. And we have to be unapologetic about it. So that's kind of my take on how we have to, our lens for when we're viewing potential 2020 candidates.
I couldn't agree more.
I couldn't disagree more.
That's fine. And I want to hear why you disagree and talk about it. It doesn't offend me in the least.
Well, okay. Let me clarify then. I think maybe saying I couldn't disagree more is just like a gut reaction. But my second reaction to that is I'd want to run the numbers on it, because idealistically what you're saying I agree with, or ideologically I agree with what you're saying, but it only matters if we're going to win at that point, because like if people go for like the ultimate progressive candidate who represents like the grassroots campaign of the century and then they lose. Like,
Well, are you talking about Bernie Sanders?
Not necessarily, although
he
is
an example
of someone
losing
who is
a fair race. He's an example of losing a race that was rigged.
I didn't say a fair race. I'm not talking about 2016. When it comes to the 2020 election, I don't want to run into a situation where we're cutting off our nose to spite our face and, you know, just tripping over ourselves in terms of, you know, the candidate that we put out there. Let me give an example on the Republican side of where they kind of did this and they didn't have the results that they were looking for. I don't know if you guys remember Rick Santorum.
Yeah.
Who ran a very ideologically GOP-centric, very conservative campaign a few elections ago. And he really crashed and burned. And I think that we don't want to put forward someone who's going to be Rick Santorum. We want to put someone forward who if they have that ideology, can actually pull off a victory at that point.
Yeah, and this is a cheap point, but how did the Republicans fare that election?
Well, I mean...
And I recognize it's a cheap point. It's not even what I mean, but...
Yeah.
It's just, if not now, when are we going to take a stand on what we believe in the left? Or is it going to be a just continuance of compromise where we approach our elections from a compromise that just gets further compromised, where Republicans right now are not playing that game? They're uncompromising. And honestly, when they were in control, not with Trump, but before, earlier, yeah. George W. Bush era, they were getting what they wanted done. The one thing about Donald Trump is he's been pretty incompetent at getting legislation through. So I like that. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yep.
We need to put forward someone who's actually going to get results. And there's kind of a graph where it's like, at one point, you have someone who's ideologically very consistent and has the progressive goals in mind and is very uncompromising and might still be able to win. And then we have to make sure that we don't get past that, because there's like a natural point where it's like they become more like the Santorums, where it's just a little bit too much that people just aren't going to throw their support behind it. So
it's interesting that you're comparing a Republican like one-off to what a Democratic one-off would be, like the Rick Santorum, lost. So a Democratic one-off would lose, which makes no sense to me.
Well, that's what happens when you misinterpret someone.
We've never even seen it is the problem. We haven't seen a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Obama seemed like he was, but he governed in a totally different way. Mm-hmm. And he was so new to the national spotlight is that we didn't really know what to expect. We trusted him. I trusted him. And I like Obama, even though there's things I disagree with, decisions he made, but he had integrity and he did have my trust. It's now looking back on some of those decisions where it's like, why did you do that? And why did you tell us that you were going to do X, Y, Z? And it just, I don't want to run into that conundrum with Bernie Sanders. It's decades of consistency. And really my standard of progressivism is Paul Wellstone, who is our senator in Minnesota, who died in 2002. And really, that's who I grew up and idolized. And I never thought that a Paul Wellstone could become president. But now all of a sudden, Bernie Sanders is the most popular politician in America. And he almost won in 2016 while referring to himself as a socialist. All these things are things I never expected in my lifetime.
I completely agree. The only point that I want to make is, the Democratic one-offs that we're talking about here, that would be the... So, all right. So, Lars, everything that you mentioned about things that you want to do moving forward, like learn lessons from the past, don't do this, do that, and, could all be sort of... It's like, it sounds like you're setting up a case for why we should have like a socialist president or something like... And here's my point.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Here's my point. Yeah. When a Democrat who is very much to the left and progressive runs, they get people to vote who wouldn't normally vote. When a Democrat who's a moderate runs, they get people who would maybe not vote to vote Republican even.
No, they get people who would possibly vote Republican or to they vote Democrat. Vote, it's the swing voters in that situation.
Or they vote the Green Party or they vote independent because they don't care enough. So we need someone to run who's very much progressive.
Historically, that's not true.
We need somebody to run who... Here's my point. We need somebody to run who's progressive to get more people to vote.
I agree with that, but let's hear Lars.
My one question here, which I feel like neither of you have addressed, is... Do the numbers actually support that? And if the answer to that is no, then there's no point. You have to have the numbers back that up. And if they do, then great. And I voted for Bernie Sanders, by the way.
When Bernie Sanders ran, people came out to support him in, you know, record numbers. When Barack Obama ran, people supported him in record numbers.
Absolutely.
Beto O'Rourke, people supported him in record numbers. You know, Alexandria Cortez, record numbers.
But only two of those won. So the question is, do the numbers back it up in terms of successful results? If they do, then great.
It's pretty clear. Most people would agree. Some will disagree because they'll go to their deaths believing this, but that Bernie Sanders would have beat Trump. And I know anecdotally that multiple people in my life would not vote for Hillary Clinton is the thing. Some voted for Trump. Some just didn't vote. Mm-hmm. Some voted for Jill Stein. But it was everyone in my life. I didn't see that same reaction of I would not vote for Bernie Sanders. My grandma felt she was the most honest one. She's a Republican. And then when it became Hillary versus Trump, she voted for Trump, where she would have voted for Bernie Sanders. So
A tale many, many people are familiar with, myself included.
Yeah.
So the question is, when it comes to the specific candidate that we push forward, I would like someone who can produce those results. And if that can be someone who is progressive to the point where I can ideologically agree with them,
so
that's better.
So let's circle back to one of the very first points I made when I started talking was how I fear this rural, urban-rural divide between the Republicans and the Democrats, and the Democrats have totally lost rural areas, which used to be strongholds of the Democrats because of labor unions and just in Minnesota, our party is called the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. We're supposed to be a rural party, but we're only represented now in the suburbs and urban areas. If we don't start doing progressive platforms which benefit rural areas, the party is going to be how the United States is set up with two senators per state and how our Congress is set up where it's not actually representative. We're never going to win. So we have to increase our voting pool, and you do that from who represents your party. So we can't keep talking about like tax incentives that people don't understand. You have to be talking about for rural areas, at least, like broadband everywhere, public transportation, because in these areas, people who don't drive can't get around. And the Republicans aren't going to be providing for that, even though they're voting for it. And the reason they're voting for it is because Democrats talk so often about infrastructure in urban areas and things that would benefit that. And they go, well, I don't want to pay for that because I'll never be there. So when you talk about these programs that are easy to understand, like Medicare for All or any sort of universal basic income, that's something everyone understands. And as soon as they start receiving the benefits, they want those. They vote for those. And that's when the Republicans start making compromises on their principles.
So what you're saying is that, like you kind of talked about last episode, that there needs to be a push for kitchen sink issues. I remember you had discussed that in detail.
And a lot of people refer to them as bread and butter issues. But basically, you got to go back and see how FDR talked. And that's how we have to reach out to people, because he was phenomenally popular in these rural areas. And with the people are forgetting what labor unions can even do for your life, because they've just continuously shrink, and right to work is in over half the country now. It's detrimental, and people, especially with, we're all millennials here. Our generation doesn't even really have a comprehension of a middle class anymore. It's feast or famine.
That's interesting to say. Yeah.
Approaching, you have to admit with what we, well, okay, hold on. Trump was never supposed to win. And, it was the conventional wisdom we all bought into that Hillary Clinton was a shoo-in. So if we continue to think in those lines, we're going to continually be have surprises like this, because things are totally different than they've ever been. And we have to address that. So Democrats have to become a party of the future and speak to the people that way.
Let's stop putting out candidates that are subpar candidates compared to what we really want to see happen, because we think that they're going to get the numbers and win, which we have learned is not the case.
So aside from the obvious individual that I'm sure you guys would both mention, which I think could do great things both in the Oval Office and continuing in Congress, who else are we looking at that point? Because it's getting to that time now where we kind of have to start pushing for that.
Besides who? Beto?
No, besides Bernie.
Besides obviously.
Well, there's Bernie Sanders, Biden, Warren.
Who should we push though?
I would.
That's the dilemma. And I don't like being this way, but it's like of these names. So the names are Joe was trying to mention Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Beto O'Rourke, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar.
I would like to see Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders on the same ticket.
So a problem I have with Kamala Harris is a more of a fundamental issue, is that she was a state prosecutor. And it's like, that's not a background of my kind of left. So, and
not the background of what?
Just my kind of beliefs, like just how I like frame my worldview of looking at like, are we really going to approach the drug war where marijuana users are criminals and you continue to build criminal records? So it's just someone of that background. And it's just for me, being a close observer, she's taken a 180 since she's wanted to run for president. And she's taken cues from the guy we're talking about, Bernie Sanders, who's been setting the conversation. So I wish I had multiple options, because Bernie's super old, and it's like, that's not who I want all my eggs in one basket with either. It's just, he's the only one that's doing the principled progressive platform for me.
Well, what I was also saying about Bernie Sanders is, like I said, you know, he's very useful in Congress as well.
Yeah.
Like, he's fighting the good fight there. That, you know, that doesn't mean that he shouldn't be president. I'm just saying, like, there's an argument for keeping him there where he's probably going to fight until the day he dies.
Or we can make him president and give him the power to make, like, drastic change. I mean, I don't see that as a... wouldn't it be better to have him as president?
Do you really not see how he might be more beneficial to Congress at that point?
I see how he could be beneficial in Congress. I don't see how he could be more beneficial in Congress than as a president.
Are you kidding me?
So once he became a presidential candidate, what he did was set the conversation in ways that people have never heard on national TV and just a general dialogue. He talked about income inequality and a true working class platform. But he also talked about things like inherent flaws in capitalism, like there isn't a need for 27 different deodorants. And that's not something any other prominent figure talks about. So that's why he's important in a role like president to shape what we want in this country.
Yeah,
I agree with just about everything you said. I'm confused on why 27 deodorants is important to that. I mean, that's... Like, are you arguing against competition or?
No. The catastrophe of climate change that is coming, and this is a hard thing to just throw in, but.
Yeah, go for it.
With American imperialism and pushing capitalism in these third world countries, Indonesia, India, what you have is these, you see rivers that are just full of plastic bags and different products. And it's like, well, this is all capitalism not addressing like the needs of this country and just the helping the few that have the power, whether they're in America, whether they're in the UK, whether they're in Germany. They're the ones that are profiting, and then the people of these countries are struggling, and all of this is coming to, like, we needed to tackle climate change yesterday, but things aren't getting better at all, and in these third world countries with United States imperialism and that, they're not going to unless we really fundamentally reshape how we think here and across the world, which goes back to my nationalist globalist view rather than the liberal conservative view.
Mm-hmm. So do you think maybe perhaps we should be backing a candidate, not in terms of left wing versus right wing per se, although probably end up landing on the left wing, but someone who favors a more globalist, more responsible globalist platform that acknowledges the international issues and stuff. If that's the case, I would absolutely 100% agree. I mean, that's indisputable. I mean, we're a world player, and I think right now Donald Trump's kind of proven that the inability to get along with other countries and help them make meaningful progress is, it's really tarnishing our reputation in a lot of ways, but it's also really inhibiting progress in that area. You're absolutely correct that climate change is something that should have been already addressed, and facing a lot of pushback against it on the GOP, who clearly has financial motivations for pushing back against it. So, yeah, I definitely favor climate change activism in a candidate, so I would agree with that.
I can't hear Joe.
Well, I don't know. I don't really have anything new to add.
I think we're all in agreement on that one.
In my personal opinion, I want to talk about flaws in capitalism, but that doesn't mean I'm a USSR socialist. I consider myself a social democrat for social democracy. That's still a capitalist system, but with just strong welfare.
That leads me to a question, by the way, which I feel like is kind of an elephant in the room that we've been ignoring as a country for a really long time, which is that we don't have a pure capitalist economy, and the alternative to that is not a pure socialist economy. It's weird because we keep pretending like capitalism good, socialism bad, but the truth is that we have a mixed economy with capitalist and socialist elements. So the game we're playing, it's like we're pretending we're playing one, but we're really playing another, and it's weird that we never talk about that.
Yeah, and that's why the right runs on that anything that you make a public or government run is communism or socialism. But really the model that anyone in America on the left, like Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, they can call themselves democratic socialists, but they're really pushing for social democracy, like the Nordic model, Denmark, Sweden. It's just our conversations are intellectually dishonest in this country. And conservatives they're utilizing YouTube really well to push this untrue narrative. And that's one of my biggest fears, is they're dominating on new media platforms, and they've dominated on talk radio, cable TV platforms in the past. So my fear is that why isn't the left doing better on these new media podcasts? To your guys' credit, are the only place where we're really doing a good job.
You heard it here first, listeners. We're the only place that's really doing a good job.
First podcast, baby.
Yeah.
First podcast.
Well, I kind of agree with what you're saying there. And I think that I'm noticing a slight trend away from that when it comes to places like YouTube and such.
Yeah, it is actually true. There is a slight trend away from that because a year ago, there was no left voice on there. So you're right about that.
It's kind of like there was this trend where everyone was like gung-ho on being like a social justice warrior. And then there were a bunch of reactionary, you know, alt-writers who were like, oh, that's bad. And then what ended up happening is like people kind of wised up a little bit that, oh, well, that doesn't mean that the right is now somehow correct. Like, just because some people are being doofy on the left doesn't mean that the progressive movement is somehow bad as a whole. So I think over time, you know, people do continue to wise up. So I think as long as, you know, we keep putting shows like this one out here, it doesn't have to be this one in particular. Like, I think people should just keep fighting the good fight and putting their voices out there. That's That's helpful.
And one way that the left is really dominating right now is just the public consciousness of morality. Like, you see a movement in millennials and young people that they're even becoming Christians, but they're becoming progressive left-wing Christians, which in my mind has a lot less cognitive dissonance mm-hmm. for what you're trying to believe in. And I just notice what yeah. people feel is right and wrong aligns with politically what we're trying to achieve. So that gives me a lot of hope and faith, whereas mm-hmm. what's on YouTube gives me concern. But yeah. obviously, the morality of the country is a much bigger thing to win.
Yeah, I think Protestants are somewhat taking influence from the Catholic school of thought, where it's still a little bit more about embracing what you call actual biblical principles, as someone who's actually read the Bible in its entirety. If you're going to be a professing Christian, you probably shouldn't be a Republican. That makes no sense. That has nothing to do with the New Testament.
Well, the reason people are often Christians and Republicans is just because the people around them are Christians and Republicans, and people are sheep yeah. and they do what other people do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the evangelical voting bloc is dying out drastically because they're not getting new members. Young people are flocking to either being secular or embracing this progressive Christianity that is really booming right now. And that is just really hopeful mm-hmm. because across the world, most Christian parties are liberal parties, whereas most world, like European countries, they have more political parties than we do in America. So their liberal party still has challengers that are further left to them, but they're not reactionary conservatives like in America we assume Christian voters are.
America really does have a very unique situation with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of very odd things in America in politics that don't align with the rest of the world.
Very unique in good and bad ways, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Joe, you had some things that you specifically wanted to get into, but I guess we never really talked about yet. You had mentioned specifically the idea of young people getting involved. We did touch on that a little bit in the last episode with Hunter, but an episode we just recorded with Shirley Raines, who does a Beauty to the Streets program in Skid Row, where she does Step A for helping the homeless crisis.
Amazing.
We basically thought we should do something like that with progressivism here tonight, where we talk about Step A.
Right, like in activism, the homeless crisis, Step A is not getting homeless people into houses. Shirley looks at homelessness as like camping. But when you go camping, you bring your necessities, and it's not so bad.
And then eventually you get them in homes once they're
right. So the step A is to give them the yeah. things that they need on the streets physically, you know, showers, yep. Friendship, makeup.
So what's step A for progressivism?
Before I get into that, just since this is so relevant, before I came back to the station today, I was at a Christmas party at what's called Launch Ministries. And it's exactly what you're talking about. Step A for homelessness for people 18 to 29 in Chaska, where I live, which is a suburb in Minnesota, that is so very familiar with programs like this and how good they are. You're asking me.
Let's talk about that for a second. What is Step A in for homelessness in your community? Because it's different in each community.
So Chaska, Minnesota, a place you would not expect any care for homeless people, has it's called Launch Ministries, which provides food, it provides laundry, it provides clothing, shoes, boots, socks, all basic necessities free to people either homeless or just struggling, 18 to 29. They really don't have any limits because they know working a full-time job at minimum wage to even $15, $20, you can't get an apartment in the suburbs.
Yeah. It's interesting that you brought up clothing, because Shirley, our guest from last time, said that if the people in her community said to her, "Wow, we love your clothes, we love your shoes," she would have brought them clothes and shoes like hers. But they said, "We love your hair, we love your makeup, we love your eyelashes. So she got them hair dye, makeup, eyelashes, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was like a self-esteem thing for them that is sorely missing in a lot of homeless
people's
lives.
And women want to look pretty, even if they're homeless. They want to be, you know, human.
This is totally similar to that, where any of those needs or even luxury goods, like hair and makeup, they try their best to provide. And it's all through just our local citizens donating. Mm-hmm. And they actually have, I tried to donate a bunch of bags yesterday, and they're too overwhelmed with donations at the time that I have to wait 2 weeks to bring my things in. So it's going very well in a part of Minnesota you would not expect to have this much care for people struggling. And you know why this is occurring is because it's all too common. We see that everyone 20 to 30 years old can't get an apartment. They're all living in multi-generational homes, staying with their parents. And it's just people have that morality I was talking about, that they just have to do something because they themselves are being affected by this, or people in their life that they can see firsthand that this is a struggle.
So, okay, let me, I just want to maybe offer a possible frame, and you can agree or disagree with it. But let's say for step A, let's say you're someone like Joe and myself, where you're positioned as somewhat, you know, of an online activist, where you're fighting the good fight, and you're spreading it correct information where it's incorrect. You're arguing for the right policies. You're arguing for a progressive platform, and you're kind of feeling like, wow, things aren't really going too well. And you know, we had some victories in the midterm, but we're kind of concerned about where things are going in 2020, where people are saying like, oh yeah, Trump for sure is going to get elected. So it's kind of like they're being at a crossroads, like you said. What's step A for someone in that kind of situation?
You join either an organization, or you just find like minds and meet regularly, because you start sharing experiences, opportunities that you were unaware of, and you start making change. So for a lot of people I know that live in the city, or because I used to live in New York, so I know a lot of people out there. Mm. So for young people, DSA is really popular and very good organization for step A. That's Democratic Socialists of America. They do a lot of direct action, Medicare for All lobbying, but also just telling you how local governing works. For me, I joined Indivisible, and I'm the youngest person there. It's mostly retired old ladies or middle-aged couples. And
oh, so you fit right in.
but what we did is we gained a consciousness of awareness that none of us knew on our own. And people in my group started joining local commissions, started running for office, started winning offices. And this all happened because we had the support of each other. So a step A is to find like minds, and the organizations that I would recommend are DSA, like I mentioned, Indivisible, like I mentioned, Our Revolution is Good, which is an offshoot of Bernie Sanders. What are some other? Mm-hmm. Also, just getting involved, your county is going to have a Democratic committee that is party members. They will be able to point you in the right direction if those other organizations aren't there.
Besides joining an organization, is there anything else somebody could do? Like, I guess just it's all about networking, right? So the underlying message is network with people?
That's what it is. Yeah.
Starting local.
Or like if there's not an organization available, I guess then turn to online also, right?
Or start one.
But
you have to have praxis.
And there's not one around you, then online becomes, does that become your best option or?
It does, but it's always people, because that's what our game is. It's influence. That's what our primary purpose is to influence other people. To do that, you have to be around other people. So I would not recommend online. I would recommend doing whatever it takes to find that one other person where the two of you can start something if there's absolutely no other options.
Even if it's just like an unofficial network between people that you're meeting by going to places where there's going to be other like-minded people and then discussing how you can, you know, influence more people to be on the same page.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And so after 2016, people, I live in the most conservative county in Minnesota.
I'm sorry to hear that.
We didn't know there was other progressives in our county. And after Trump won, people started looking into what can they do? And Indivisible became an option. It was to be the left-wing Tea Party was the goal. So they structured themselves exactly how the Tea Party started. And this couple started the group, and they just started talking to other people, showing up at city events, having little booths. And that's how I met them. And now it's a 200, 300 people strong group that have a network of progressives in this county that are actually going out and doing things like addressing homelessness or affordable housing, which are totally neglected in the suburbs, and making real progress. And then that influences the larger narrative, and we win elections statewide. Like, the Democrats had tremendous success here in Minnesota, like in California, but it was because of suburban organizing and the typical urban organizing that goes on throughout the years.
So essentially what you're saying is, my original argument was, do we have the numbers for that? And what you're saying indirectly here is, make the numbers happen, you know, start adding to those numbers.
Yeah, I'll tell you that numbers wise, yeah, in Minnesota, there was 12 districts that Hillary Clinton won that had Republican state representatives. And this election, all 12 of them lost. They were all suburban districts. And it was just because people showed up. But they showed up because of organizing within their city, pushing others out there and creating numbers that we didn't realize we had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you may not realize it, but they're out there, man. I mean, you know, if a bunch of furries can meet up and realize that they all want to, like, you know, dress up as animals and just go hang out and do stuff together. I mean, like, surely just like the local Democrats can figure it out. They're there. Like, you know, there's Trey Crowders in the South. There's, just because it seems kind of red in your area, doesn't mean that there aren't like-minded people around who kind of have a clear head when it comes to a progressive platform.
Yeah. And you talk about what you care most, if it's feminism, if it's climate change, if it's racial issues like Black Lives Matter, if it's furry voting.
Mm-hmm.
There's fascist furries, by the way. So if you're a furry, you should be organizing, because I know of Nazi furries. So
what? Nazi furries?
Wait.
Nazi furries, like people who dress up as furries that are Nazis?
Furries in Third Reich outfits. Yep.
Ooh. Furries in Third Reich outfits. My name called it.
Hey, I told you the primary purpose is influence, right? So every person matters.
Well, the free vote does matter, dude. I mean, let's get back to what we were talking about.
The larger point is, if you have to be the spearhead of something, you go into your identity and what you care about and branch off from them. And then you start meeting people who have other experiences and other expertise, and you get a coalition together. And it's not idealistic in any matter, because I've just seen it flourish, and it's flourishing right now because of the climate in our country.
So besides getting people elected to various positions, what are some other kinds of accomplishments that you could see happen because of these coalitions? Like
direct action. And this is what Black Lives Matters have done, and it's why they're such a target to the right, because they've had effectiveness, and so they're demonized. But in Chaska, I'll give you an example. This past week at the Chaska High School, one of the black students, which is very rare in this, it's a like 95% white school, they started writing the N-word on his clothes, and he had to wear his gym shirt, which said the N-word, under a sweatshirt during gym. So people, once word got out, showed up. They showed up to the school board meetings. They made appointments at the school to talk to them, to make the school address the problem. And so direct action is the next step from organizing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Direct action. Preach. What about, like, not on such a large scale, but on a small scale? Would you just say,
well,
in
that,
your community?
That was a very small scale.
Well, yeah, that was small
example.
Scale.
Right?
That was
a very local
issue. Yeah, okay.
I mean, this was one kid, and now just because people care and because there's a network to share this information, hundreds of people showed up. Hundreds of people had solidarity with this kid who had to go through a struggle, and things are happening. And people are going to continue to show up because of, I was at an Invisible meeting last night, actually, and they talked about, we're going to the next school board meeting, and who's going to the third one? And people signed up. So that's why I'm saying all this plays into one another.
So Steppy is kind of showing up.
Showing up is so big. And too often, why I don't recommend the internet is the internet is so full of ideas and so little action. I mean, it can be used as an action tool for organizing people, like Facebook events are a great way, but just posturing about ideas on Reddit and getting in Facebook arguments is so counterproductive.
Well, I agree, although I can say from personal experience that as someone who very frequently has political discussions on Facebook, I've had quite a few people over the years, they would either come up to me in person or message me saying that I had actually influenced their thoughts on certain controversial issues and by extension, how they voted.
Sure.
So I don't want to discount that entirely.
I'm not discounting it. I'm just like, having a hierarchy of
yeah,
where
I'm not saying
your
you are.
Focus
I'm just saying
should be.
We should still also be putting the right ideas out there into cyberspace. I mean, let's not stop
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but... The posting wars are going to be fought by the posting warriors. They are not the ones, though, that are influencing major change. They make minor change, I'll agree, but it's the people that are going places, that are talking to people in person, that are making a true difference, because you either plant seeds or you shape their consciousness by having a discussion one-on-one. I know I've changed a lot of people's minds on medical assistance in Minnesota because I had to talk about, I had to be vulnerable and talk about my personal experience that had medical assistance not existed, I turned 26, got off my parents' healthcare, came to Minnesota, was very poor at the time, and medical assistance provided me to go to treatment for heroin addiction that I was going to die if I didn't have something change. And when people start hearing that and other people tell their personal stories, they go, wow, well, for that one thing, we have to do that. And then they start shifting away from reactionary status quo views that they might have had before they encountered other people. Because, sorry, I'm going on a rant, but...
So step C is being willing to be vulnerable.
Yeah, I would say that, but quick, the reason why you do that is urban areas are the most left-wing liberal areas, and it's because you encounter a lot of different people, so that shapes your perception of the world. So more suburban and rural areas struggle because you don't interact with a lot of different people. So when you put yourself out there, tell your story of why this matters to you, and other people do the same, that starts shifting perceptions.
So I think that we've kind of discussed all we wanted to discuss about that, but I did want to give you a chance to mention some of the things you've been up to recently. You said you started a new radio program since we last chatted, and I wanted to give you a chance to plug that.
Yeah, so I host solo Thursdays, 4 p.m. here on AM 950 KTNF, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Progressive talk show where I get full reign. I get to talk about whatever I want. And the show is billed as we have three hosts. It's me, Hunter Hawes, Brett Johnson, and Doug Padgett. But the reason we have three hosts at the 4 o'clock hour, which is the drive time radio hour, the most important hour on our station, is our show is shaped to have discussions and to have different views or different perceptions, I keep saying, but to approach it as not one person ranting, but three people talking about different ideas with different people, and that being the special sauce that holds us together.
So you're saying that it's a better format than the Alex Jones one person screaming into the microphone format?
Not saying it's better, saying it's different.
I'm saying it's better.
Because we have great talkers. They're very emotional. But our approach is to provide the news, to give our takes, but be less emotional and to hear different people out. So something that I've wanted to do with the show is have at the end of the show a person with a different ideology speak and just share why they view that way, whether it be a conservative, a libertarian, a socialist, a communist, a fascist, a Nazi, to hear them out, where I'm not going to interject. Afterwards, I'll give my commentary, but I'll let them speak just so we understand different people and how they come to these worldviews.
So you let people have the talking stick, and then, you know, you can demolish the argument afterwards, but you just want to get another perspective.
Yeah, because so often on talk radio, it's all about that interjecting and why you're right. So this show is more about listening, but also providing that important commentary on why these issues are so important, that personal level. That's AM 950 KTNF. Minneapolis, Minnesota. Our website is am950radio.com. We have podcasts of every show, and we have live streaming. We have great programming. Stephanie Miller in the mornings, Tom Hartman in the afternoons, Democracy Now!, then our local programming, Matt McNeil, me, Hunter Haas at 4 p.m., and then Norman Goldman. It's a great lineup. Check out www.am950radio.com. It's great.
All right. So, Joe, just out of curiosity, is this was intended to sort of be unofficially, quote unquote, your episode to ask Hunter anything else you wanted to talk about. Is there anything else you wanted to get into? Maybe anything, any parting words for him to?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Here's my one last question. That's more of an organizational question than about ideology. When you're keeping up with somebody's argument that they're giving you, or they're talking to you and they have the talking stick, and when it's your turn to respond, what are you doing the whole time to sort of think about what you're going to say? Are you writing it down physically, or it's just organized in your mind, or you've heard the same arguments over and over, so you already know what to say?
So who am I speaking with? Someone like that has a totally different ideology than me?
Someone who disagrees. Maybe they're not making the best points, but how do you keep track of sort of what's going on and how you're going to respond?
So here's how I've done it since I was 12 years old, and I used to go over to my friend's Republican dad's house and talk with him to debate, because I was into that when I was young. What I learned was, if we stay talking for a long amount of times, you start realizing where they're coming from and what you share, and you build off that. So you hear something key, like why they want lower taxes because they need to make ends meet. So you talk about, well, that's why I'm fighting for labor unions. That's why your industry should have a labor union. And they start agreeing with you. But what it takes is listening for a long time, and then seeing what they care about, and you share those values, because humans have the same values typically, and give them your view on that and why it's important to you. So listening is the key.
Mm-hmm. And engaging.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was thinking, and I don't mean this really to Joe at all, but what he was saying is like, how do you organize what you're going to say in response? But maybe how Hunter would do it is just listening and not getting to that yet, maybe taking some time to process it.
Yeah, you don't want to put up walls immediately. You want to hear them out. Mm-hmm. You want to ask questions why that's important to them. And you'll start going, oh, well, I know why that same value is important to me. And you talk about it. And I've heard this so many times in my life that I have never heard that before. Total conservatives, they tell me, I've never heard anyone say it that way to me.
Yeah, I've heard that before too.
Okay. that's some good food for thought, I think. So I think we can go ahead and cap things if you want, Joe and Hunter, unless you have anything else you've been dying to get into.
Yeah, there is one thing. So this morning, I lost another friend to drug addiction. This is the fourth friend I've lost this year.
I'm sorry to hear
this
that.
I'm sorry.
It's becoming so difficult. When I was young, a death would happen every several years, and you had proper time to grieve. Now I'm having so many people close in my life die that it is becoming hard to schedule funerals, like to make it to them. And it's, you know how The Onion runs the same headline every time that a mass shooting happens? Now, every time I lose someone in my life, I have to devote my entire show to addiction, because if I have a platform, I have to do it, because this is the rate of people we're losing to the opioid epidemic is larger than World War One, World War Two soldiers lost during that time. So it's such a massive problem. And the way the media does talk about it, but we don't talk about solutions ever. We don't talk about the drastic thing that has to happen to save people's lives. And this problem is different than like tobacco use in the 90s, because that was something where people died at a reasonable age. These are 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, people that should not be dying, that had a lot of life left. So we have to be talking about drastic solutions, and people are not doing that.
So you think that needs to be a key focus for the next few years, so, or at least
a frustration of mine is I spoke to a lot of people who were running for office in these midterms. I mean, I'm talking 30, 40, 50 people running for key positions. And I asked each one of them whenever I had an opportunity, what are you going to do about the opioid epidemic? And all but one told me they just diagnosed the problem. They addressed that it's happening. No one told me specifics of how we're going to change this. And it's not going to change. So the four friends I lost this year, next year, I'm expecting more. So this is a problem that is not getting solved. And it's going to take people like me just harping on it. And I have to challenge people in 2020 further than I did in 2018, because I didn't get any solutions. I got, there is a problem happening, not how we're going to fix it.
Indirectly, what I think you're saying here is that we should be supporting the candidates who actually can try to form a good answer to that. And
in preparation for 2020, we have to press people. We have to press Democrats. We have to press Republicans, because this is a shared problem. This defies party lines.
Yeah, this is bipartisan.
Yeah, and Republicans are just as willing to address this, but they don't even know the answers. So it's a problem that we have to just keep talking about, is the thing.
It is a problem. I think that this is definitely going to be an oversimplified explanation of what's going on, but people often turn to drugs when they have a reason to. Something's going wrong, you know, in their life, or there's something they're unhappy with. And a lot of the time it's socioeconomic, you know, they're, you know, you have people who are, you know, not able to get by. And so let's say they become homeless and they turn to drugs. So if we're able to sort of address some of these underlying problems, maybe with something like a basic universal income where people are able to get by that much easier, they would be turning to drugs less, maybe.
Absolutely. And no, you're framing the conversation correct. I mean, there's multiple ways we need to frame it, but that is absolutely an important one. And when I said that millennials and younger don't even have a perception of what a middle class is, that is why so many people are dying, because they don't have hope that they'll ever get out of the situation they're in now, which is unmanageable, and they cannot make ends meet or see any way that they ever could make ends meet. So they turn to, how am I going to get by today, instead of planning for a future?
So we need to address why people are self-medicating, and definitely provide the medication in whatever form that takes.
So that's the larger thing we have to do. The immediate thing we have to do is have crisis centers in every city, county, rural area that people can just go in and they're going to get help. Because I challenge people when I'm on the radio, I go, hey, call a treatment center, see how long it's going to take for you to get in. Call a methadone clinic, see how long it's going to take for you to be able to be a patient. Call a Suboxone doctor, see how long it's going to take. It takes weeks. It takes months. We need emergency clinics set up now
because
we know the problem is happening. It's undeniable. So that is the solution that city councils need to make, the mayors need to make, that state reps, that state senators, that Congress people, that U.S. senators. That is the first step that they need to do if we want people to stop dying.
Well, that and also, you know, just as individuals, I think sometimes, especially in the more fast-paced societies of places like California, we're not always checking up on people. And just, you know, just reaching out to your friends, seeing, like, if you notice certain patterns and stuff, they're there if you look for them. You can tell when someone's going down a dark road, and I don't feel like we do enough of that.
And circling back, this is why, if you have a progressive mindset, and it's important to get with like-minded people, because it's going to protect you and it's going to protect people you end up caring about as well. Because those friendships go deep once you realize you have people that are totally different from you that see the world the same way as you. They'll check up on you. They'll care for you. They'll love you just like you love them.
Okay, so I think we can probably call it a wrap about there. We have another guest coming up in a little bit, so we want to give a little bit of a pause to be able to do the after show, just kind of organize things with you a little bit. And also, let's go ahead and... Well, actually, no, we have a tradition. Let's lighten things up a little bit. The tradition now is to have the guest close up the episode. Can you go ahead and do that too?
It was an absolute honor for an old school AM radio host of the new generation to appear on this new technology, the absolute first podcast. Amazing.
I know, it's unbelievable.
Lars and Joe, I thank you so much for being here. And for everyone who cares, if you need to reach out, email, comment at AM950 Radio, and I will respond to anything that you're going through or anything that you're curious of. Thank you for the opportunity tonight.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course, yeah. Guys, reach out if you guys are looking to talk to someone, or if you have suggestions, or if you're just going through a hard time. People are there for you. We do want to hear from you.
Absolutely.
And if you'd like to do that, we are on t1podcast.com. You can also email us at firstpodcastever@gmail.com. If you liked what you heard tonight and you want to help support the show in the future, you can go to patreon.com/T1podcast, and we have a monthly subscription program there. That's about all I have for today. Thank you once again for the sophomore episode. This has been a blast. As always, your commentary is insightful. Find you a very reasonable person, and I'm glad you're on the radio up there.
Thank you. Definitely subscribe to the first podcast. They're pioneers. They started this podcast industry.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
This is Joe signing out.
Nice. That was very impassioned, Joe. Thank you.